Today on the Scott Radley Show on 900 CHML.
Earlier today, the long-awaited judicial inquiry into the Red Hill Creek Expressway situation, we'll call it that, began. This is already becoming a very expensive inquiry. It's going to go on for a long time. And what we get out of this at the end, well, we don't know yet. But there are twists and turns in this, and I don't just mean in the road, because while the inquiry is going on to find out perhaps what happened and whether the road and whether the asphalt contributed in some way to accidents, we don't know what they're going to find yet, as I say, there are also class action lawsuits that are waiting to find their way into the courts and to be heard. And one of the lawyers who is leading at least one of those, it's a $250 million class action suit against the city for this. His name is Rob Hooper, who joins me now. Mr. Hooper, thank you for this today.
Oh, no problem, Scott. Nice to talk to you.
So what does this, let me back up again. As a lawyer who is theoretically going to potentially be in court at some point to argue this case, unless there were to be a settlement, but we don't know any of that stuff yet. How closely will you be following every single day of this inquiry and all the minutiae that's going to come out of here?
I don't think that myself or my team will follow it on a daily basis for the minutiae, but obviously for us, the information that comes out about the report, about what the city knew or didn't know, some of the details about the accidents, we'll be watching very closely, and as I understand it from counsel for the inquiry, there'll be transcripts available. So we will be poring over those, looking for details. And Scott, as a way of background, as the class action lawyer, we only know what we've been told by the people who have contacted us. We have none of the city's documents. That's not allowed in the class action world until after you've been certified, and the class action has not been certified as of yet. And so there's lots of information we're going to gain over the next few months that the city has that we don't have.
It is an interesting or a unique situation, isn't it, though? Because normally, if you go into a lawsuit with a city or anyone else, you're not being handed over a period of time sworn testimony that you can then rely on when you go into court. Usually you'd be going in with a lot more mysteries of what people are going to say. Here, it's handed to you.
Obviously, there are some disclosure rules in the legal process, but yes, we have actually argued the class action certification motion in March without any of that information. And now, as you say, it's going to come to us day by day. And we're very eager to hear what maybe some of the other drivers say, what the engineers say, and what we hear about friction over the next, as you say, months. So it will be a good thing for us. It will put an anchor in for us to know what information might be available.
Right, because normally, again, if you're in a trial, you believe you know what the witnesses might say. You hope you think you know what the witnesses might say. Here, you've already got it while they're under oath to tell you what they're going to say.
Well, yeah, the analogy for me is that if you had a trial and there was a mistrial, which would mean the trial got canceled or stopped for some reason, you would have transcripts of part of the trial, and those witnesses will, in this process, we're going to get transcripts on a daily basis of what everyone says. So if it's certified by the certification judge, then yes, we will be very eager to know what everybody's going to say throughout the process, which might promote settlement in the long term.
My understanding, and please correct me if I've got this wrong, but my understanding is a judicial inquiry is not going to assign blame. The justice who's hearing this is not going to point fingers and say, you're at fault, you're at fault, you're at fault. But there will obviously be conclusions that get drawn. Is that parsing it too fine, or can someone who is going to do what you're doing down the road get the same out of this, whether there's blame cast or not?
You are correct in that I do not think the justice hearing the public inquiry is going to point fingers for blame. but there will be certainly some factual determinations made, and the factual underpinnings of what might be our case in the future. Certainly that foundation may be, not guaranteed, but may be developed through the factual underpinnings and maybe even the recommendations made by the judicial inquiry. So I don't see any way it's going to hurt. And in fact, I think it probably will help the citizens to know a little bit more of what may have caused all this issue and kerfuffle about the Red Hill Valley Parkway.
Are you allowed to say how many people are involved in this suit at this point, or how many have expressed interest?
Well, what I can tell you is that approximately, and this is public knowledge, if because it was in the documentation during the certification motion, that there were approximately 1,500 people who have had, that we can confirm had accidents on the parkway at that time. The number that have contacted us would be in the hundreds at this point.
All right. This is a tricky one for me to ask and for you to answer, I'm sure. But are you a good guy in this? And let me explain why I ask you that way. If you win, you're certainly going to help your clients, and they've had accidents and on and on. But if you win, many people in the city, our taxes are going to presumably pay for this massive amount of money. So are you a good guy in this, or are you a bad guy in this?
Well, I'd like to think, Scott, I'm always a good guy, but to answer your question directly, I think that no matter whether it's a lawyer, a doctor, a municipality, if there is something they've done to harm their citizens, and they're the elected officials, and that has happened, and it happens on their watch, because that's been brought to light by a lawsuit or a public inquiry, and that is a cost to the taxpayer and to the citizens, doesn't necessarily make us the bad guy. And I would go as far to say that probably the lawsuit will certainly, the cost of the inquiry are certainly climbing. And I understand there's a massive amount of documents, so that's not a criticism, but I don't see how it's a bad thing that the bureaucrats or the elected officials and people that they're responsible for are being called to task for something that may have put citizens at risk. And so what I would say in conclusion to that is, would you rather your taxes go up $5 and your children be safe on the roadways of this town? Or would you prefer we all turn a blind eye to potentially bad roadways and put our families at risk for injury and possibly fatalities?
Just before I let you go, and thank you for that answer. Just before I let you go, the class action amount, and just clarify this, because I don't think many people understand, the class action amount is listed at $250 million. What would have to happen for that amount to be paid out? Because that's not an automatic thing. It's not zero or 250. Why was that number chosen, and what would have to happen for that to be given?
Well, without being too flippant, it's just a number. Because, as I alluded to at the beginning, we have very little knowledge of the people who were involved, the amount of injury they have, maybe the loss of wages. So it really is a guesstimate. And to be fair to the city of Hamilton and to the citizens of the city of Hamilton, the number is probably extremely too high, and it's just a number. Of the 1,400, 1,500, somewhere around there, people who had crashes, many of them will turn out to find out they weren't hurt. They didn't have a life-altering injury. We'll find out that maybe they got a ticket from the police. Maybe their insurance went up. Maybe they had to pay for damage to their car. So I'm going to hazard a guess that of that, I'll just round it to 1,500, that many of those people will have very small claims, if any claim, for either property damage or money out of their pocket. And that eventually, if the class action is certified, that we'll get down to several hundred people who have had real injuries, like Ms. Klassen, the representative plaintiff, who, you know, has never gone back to work since the accident.
That is Rob Cooper. He is the lawyer leading the class action suit about in regards to the Red Hill Creek Expressway. The inquiry began today. We'll be hearing about this a lot over the next little while. Mr. Hooper, thank you so much for the time today.
Thanks so much, Scott. Have a great day.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
We know there is an election coming up, a provincial election, and we know that parties are beginning to put out their platforms, whether dribs and drabs or whether, like the NDP today, they put out pretty much their entire platform. And it would probably be best and I think most fairly described as being a lot of things to a lot of people. Universal pharmacare, universal dental care, universal mental health care, hiring more nurses, more personal support workers, taking limits off public sector compensation increases, more doctors, converting post-secondary student loans into grants, 50,000 new long-term beds, 60,000 supportive housing units, 20,000 teachers. There's a lot. There's a lot. I want to bring in Monique Taylor, who is MPP for Hamilton Mountain. She joins us now. Monique, thank you for the time today.
Oh, thank you, Scott. I'm happy to be here.
As I'm going through it, and I obviously did not give the complete list, it's a mouthful. There's an awful lot of stuff in there.
Absolutely. People will see themselves reflected in our platform that we probably not in there because people are desperate in so many ways in our communities. So we're touching on so many aspects that people have asked us for, and it's doable. And we believe that we can achieve it and we can get it done and we can truly make life better for Ontarians.
One thing that I didn't mention before, and we'll get to a few other things I didn't mention, but I didn't mention that there is a promise in here that taxes will be frozen for lower and middle income people. So when you add that in, along with everything else. I mean, really, every single person in the province would be touched by this.
That's right. And because we know that life is getting harder and harder for folks, right up to that $200,000 mark for their income. So we want to ensure that that people feel satisfied and that they're assured not only taxes, we will take away that to give them that flexibility to buy that home, to have that extra income within their household, to be able to spend it in our communities on buying that first home, on paying the rent. I mean, we're seeing things get more and more expensive each and every day. And we believe that that will go a long way to helping folks.
There will, I think, undoubtedly be those who love what you've put down there and think there's a lot of stuff in here that they really, really like. There will also be others, I think, and you probably would agree, I don't think you would disagree with this, who will say that this sounds extraordinarily expensive. And how in the world can we do all the things that are being promised without increasing taxes or without putting us even into more of a massive debt in this province? How do we do that?
For sure. Well, we've watched governments waste money for years. We have watched the government at the snap of their fingers send $1.4 billion out, returning sticker funds for their vehicles. There are ways that can be managed, and it's responsibly. It's making sure that we have the healthcare that people count on when they need it. It's making sure that we're taking care of our seniors, making sure that we're taking our kids and their mental health. These are important issues that have been neglected for so long. And I think that people realize the things we're making actually reflect the thing that they've been asking for.
I mean, as I was starting to go through some of the numbers and like just estimates or guesstimates here, but the teachers alone that would be hired, that's like $2 billion a year when you include benefits and pensions, and nurses, probably $3 billion. And the conference board said long-term beds are $320,000 each to make. There's $16 billion. I mean, it does add up to a big ticket to do all these things.
It sure does. But we also know that there's many folks out there, with very high incomes that have not been paying their fair share. They've been shipping their money offshore or, big corporations that haven't been paying their fair share. We can do this. It's doable. And we know that it can be done. But we just, need the ability to be able to do it by spending the money now. We will save money later. When you invest in in people's health, they don't need to enter the emergency room in the same way. When we invest in kids' mental health, they won't need the services that they need. Well, they'll need later in life if we're not providing that investment. So it's pay now or pay later. But it's definitely very doable. And I mean, you're not seeing anything different come out of the Ford government, who's running around the province right now, right before an election, throwing billions of dollars out the door, right? So it's not much different, but the difference is that this will actually help people on the ground with the everyday needs that they've been asking us for.
I have a feeling that the cost is going to be something that is talked about a lot during this election. So let me move on to a couple other things, because they're going to get all kinds of talk about that. Something I didn't mention off the top again in that list, exclusionary zoning. The NDP says it would end this, meaning people could theoretically build different types of housing in places where right now they could only build a single family home. The idea here being that you would create more units. Would that work?
Absolutely. I think that communities, you know, once they see things starting to happen in a different way, realize how great it can be. I'm sure that we have enough supportive help for folks needed when they is really valuable. Having the mixed use and, taking away some of the not in my backyard by really expanding what housing could look like is necessary. I mean, we are seeing so many people who are homeless, people who are not able to afford the rent any longer. By making sure that we have a whole basket of different types of housing is going to be really important, particularly when we want to ensure that we're saving our farmland, that our protected green space. We can do both, but we have to be able to buckle down in our communities and look at things differently.
You did mention not in my backyard. And I got to say, this is another one. I wonder, a lot of people, I think, like the idea of this until they buy a house. They've bought a house in a neighborhood and their neighbor suddenly puts up a multiplex next to them. I'm sure they don't seem quite so thrilled, a lot of them. You may have a lot of blowback from people if all of a sudden their neighborhood changes its character or changes its look considerably.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely going to be a growing process for a lot of folks, but everybody has to realize that housing is a human right and everybody needs to have access to that housing. And we can build our community still as we choose to see them and how we love them. They may be a little bit different because we're adding a little extra, but it shouldn't take away from the beauty that we already see in so many communities across Ontario.
One more thing, and again, we could be talking about this all day because there's a lot to chew on here and people can go and look at the platform for sure and see what's there. But Monique, one other thing that I wanted to ask you about, which I found really interesting, it's something that's been talked about at different levels of government for a while now, and that is converting post-secondary loans to grants. When I say talked about at other levels of government, lots of discussion in various ways about what to do with student loans. Would this be, how would you see this working? Would it simply be anybody in school would then have a grant instead of a student loan, or what would that mean?
I wish I had the exact direction okay. for you on that one, Scott. I truly don't have the details on it, and I don't want to put myself nor you in that position. But we know that we have the highest tuition rates in the country. We have families that are struggling to even think about starting a life and bound down with student loans that they can't handle. We have watched interest rates rise on student loans. This is not how we have the ability to start lives, to create a family, to buy that first home. We need to ensure that we're helping those students, that we're helping them with the tuition, and that we're there for them, knowing that their education is also going to benefit the rest of our community. So it really is something that's been happening for much too long, and student loans that have completely gotten out of control.
So many other things I would like to ask you, maybe down the road before the election, we can do that. But Monique Taylor, MPP for Hamilton Mountain, I really appreciate the time today. Thank you for this.
Thank you, Scott. You have a great day.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
Coming to you tonight live from First Ontario Center, the Hamilton Bulldogs and Peterborough Petes just faced off about a minute into their second game of their first round playoff series, 0-0 right now.
We'll let you know if anything happens on the scoreboard as we're on the show here. It is time to bring in Don Robertson, who is the guy behind ComChoice Realty and the soon-to-be, we hope, crowned once again Dundas Citizen of the Year, as he has been once already, but much more importantly these days, Don Robertson, the freshly minted John Ross Robertson Cup champion as Ontario Senior Hockey Champion of the Year with his Dundas Real McCoys, who won last Monday. There you go, won last Monday night. Beat the Hamilton Steelhawks last Monday night to win the championship. Donald, congratulations.
Thank you, Scott. It was, as you would know, it was a pretty entertaining game. It's a nice crowd, and the right team won.
Good. They ever get tiring? You've won a bunch of these. You ever get sick of them? Just get sort of boring?
No. Well, we haven't won one in a while, so it was...
That's true.
It brought back some good memories, and I think we're well poised the way we've kind of rebuilt it to be able to challenge for a few coming up. It seems to go in cycles. We're pretty comfortable with the guys we've got and the group that want to come back and do it again. And, you know, it was an interesting challenge in the showcase tournament. Hamilton have a great team. They're very skilled. So it was very, I think, entertaining according to all the patrons. So we'll take it. I think it worked out well, and I think the league is going to expand. As a matter of fact, I'm having lunch with a fellow tomorrow. Just contemplating putting a team into Oakville.
So, well, good. And are you going with patrons as the term now, that this is like the Masters, this is Augusta, they are patrons, not fans now?
This year, then we considered them patrons. We upgraded everything.
Well, it was. I was there on Monday night, and it was a lot of fun. And it was, all things considered, considering all the challenges and everything else, good for you for getting a season and for winning. And just to have had a season was pretty good. But to end up winning too, that was pretty good. So well done.
It's funny. I think the Bulldogs must have scored.
No, Peterborough just scored. It's 1-0 for Peterborough early in the first period here. So I don't know.
Are you doing it at the rink? I should have come down.
Yes, I am. I am here at First Ontario Center right now, and a bit of a slow start for the Bulldogs, but they've had slow starts before.
Two things going on. The Hamilton Bulldogs are, who I believe have already won the Hamilton Spectator Trophy.
Yes, sir.
But they too are competing for the John Ross Robertson Trophy.
Yeah, what's the deal with
Cup? I think theirs is a trophy.
So who was John Ross Robertson? Because I'll tell you a funny story. Is when I was a kid, I went to John Ross Robertson Elementary School in Toronto. That's where I first went. So who was this guy? Why is every trophy named after him?
I believe he was the editor of the Toronto Star.
All right.
And ours would be the oldest one. It would make sense, right? It was a men's game. There wasn't kids, juniors playing it back then. The one that we captured was first handed out in 1899. So, and I don't know how old the one the juniors are playing for, but I'll know shortly. Another interesting fact, which is why I should have tried to come down to the game tonight, both the head coaches have played for me. Robbie Wilson played for the Brantford Smoke, the minor pro team that I was president and GM of. And
he's the coach of Peterborough.
He's the coach of Peterborough. And James Key, as you would remember, won an Allan Cup in 2014 while playing with the Dundas Real McCoys.
Well, there you go. So I'll tell you one person who seems very unlikely, Don, to be winning anything this year. And I want to ask you about him because this guy, to me, is such an interesting conundrum. Jack Eichel, who is now with Vegas Golden Knights but had been with Buffalo, guy drafted after Connor McDavid. I mean, some people back when the year that they were drafted, some people suggested that Eichel might be every bit as good as McDavid. Eichel has not only not won anywhere, I mean, he hasn't played, I don't think he's played a playoff game because the Sabres have not made it under his watch. But then he goes to Vegas, and Vegas has a pretty loaded team. And as soon as Jack Eichel shows up after demanding to be out of Buffalo, Vegas goes in the tank. And down the stretch, when Vegas has to win a couple games to stay in playoff contention, Jack Eichel is pointless for his last four games at the most crucial time of the year. Is it possible that some guys are just, I don't want to say toxic, I think that may be too strong a word, but the guys have all the talent in the world, but you just don't really want them on your team?
Well, I don't know. Those are always challenging players, right? Guys that everybody like. They've got all the skill in the world. They like the ability. Oftentimes, they even like the compete level. But they just don't know how to show up in the playoffs. I mean, they can't take their game to the next level. I mean, we all hear about guys that are playoff players. Claude Lemieux, who was very disliked by a number of teams. Each and every one of those teams would have wanted Claude Lemieux on their team in the playoffs because he just took everything to another level. We had some guys like that. That's why I liked our chances last Monday night, because I knew we had enough guys that would and could take it to the next level. And yet they don't impress you during the regular season. They don't do a whole lot, but they know how to get you there. And some guys have to grow into that role. Maybe Eichel will, or maybe he'll always just be a bitter disappointment. It would be hard to believe that he could bring a whole team down. But what can happen with a guy with that much skill? You know, the plumbers on the team, the third and fourth liners are going out there and busting their butt every night and giving everything they got, and then they see a guy with all the skill in the world that doesn't seem to give a damn. Boy, that's hard on a team. It's hard to get over that because the hard-working guys just don't get it. They're saying, give me that skill and we'll win everything. And the guy that won't pay the price, maybe he won't take a hit to make a play, maybe he won't put in the extra effort. And psychologically, it does really hurt a team. He's not doing it on purpose, he just isn't capable.
Well, and you also, I mean, the other issue is that what did you have to give up to get him? And, you know, are the pieces that you've taken away, were they productive? And, you look at a guy like him and you say, look at all that talent. He's going to be way, way better. And then if he doesn't produce, you've given up chunks of your roster that were helping you. So, I just look at him and go ahead.
Well, and you might have given up some really popular players on the team too, eh? Guys that competed hard, wanted to play, and would do anything to win a hockey game for you. And then you bring this guy in, and the other guys are going, well, he better be able to do what he's supposed to do, and he better be worth what we gave up, because we gave up two really good guys here. And it can upset the apple cart a little bit.
Well, the other thing, too, is, and I wonder, I'm always of the opinion that we like listening to guys in sports who flap their gums and talk a good game and can back it up. I mean, look, Michael Jordan was one of the all-time great trash talkers. But I don't know, Don, if I'm, and maybe it's just personality-wise, but if I'm playing somewhere, I'm probably going to keep my mouth shut until I've won something. Because Eichel was very vocal about wanting out of Buffalo and on and on and on. And you know what? When you then go and don't perform, you look like a bit of a goofball. I mean, you really do. If Eichel had gone down there and lit it up, then you say, you know what? Yeah, Buffalo was holding it back. But if you go down there and don't do anything, it looks like it was you. Fair or not, it looks like it was you.
It does. And when you want out because, well, first of all, you look like a spoiled brat. I want out because of this. I want out because of that. People are saying, you know what? Just go play. Wayne Gretzky played junior hockey in the Sioux. You know, he was drafted by the Sioux and was glad to go to the Sioux and everything else. And this guy's bitching and moaning about playing in Buffalo. And, you know, almost like he's being held back because he's playing in Buffalo. You're right. So you get out. You had best step up and prove some people wrong.
And he went to a team that has, since it's been founded, has always been really good. This is the reason I asked about, can a guy bring a team down? Because, I mean, we all know the story of Vegas. Vegas has been a terrific team from day one. Been to the finals the very first year. And it was as soon as Jack Eichel arrived, maybe coincidence, but as soon as Jack Eichel arrived, they started to go into a swoon, and now they're out of the playoff picture.
Yeah, and if they're doing that, and the coach is looking at it going, boy, now I know what the guys in Buffalo struggled with. You know, and there's also guys that, you know, will be third on your team in scoring, and you're going, you know, look, he gets a lot of goals. But when you start looking at the goals he gets, you know, he's pounding the points when you happen to win 6-3. You know, so he picks up 4 points when they're winning 6-3. He's picking up like 1 point when the game's really tough and they don't want to battle through anything to make it work. But, you know, you want to play some river hockey. They're your guy. And so you gotta pick guys that'll pay the price in the playoffs. And if they won't pay the price in the playoffs, no matter how much skill you got, it's not going to help you.
Well, and especially, especially if you are the guy, I mean, if you knew nothing about, if you had not watched any hockey for the last number of years, and you just remembered all the talk about Jack Eichel, you would assume that he is one of the best players in the league. And so I think that when you're in these spots, whether it's playoffs or almost playoffs because you're trying to get in there, you expect that that guy is going to step up. Jack Eichel cannot, I don't think, just be a mediocre guy. He's not allowed to be that because he's not being paid to be that. He wasn't drafted to be that. He has to be a difference maker. And, you know, I would say the same about Austin Matthews. I would say the same about Connor McDavid. I would say the same about all those guys. You are the guy. You have to show up. And if you don't, you're going to look what happened to Mitch Marner last year in the playoffs. He got absolutely crapped on because he disappeared. You have to be the guy.
Well, I'll tell you one of the biggest guys like that, Alexander Daigle. Ottawa picked him first overall in what is still considered one of the very best drafts ever with Chris Gratton, Chris Pronger, Todd Harvey, just naming some local guys here. And Alexander Daigle said, nobody ever remembers who got picked second. And those guys all hated that comment. As it turns out, he probably had the weakest NHL career of all top 10 guys. And he was the guy that was paid to do it and didn't show up.
Yeah. It is, it's an interesting one with Eichel. I mean, we'll see if, you know, he was coming back from an injury and he was, you know, he was in a new situation, but we'll see. This is a guy who, I don't know that there's anybody in the NHL that has as much pressure on him next year to be a star. He's got the whole offseason to figure it out and get back in shape and get his legs under him and everything else. I don't know if there's anyone else. I can't think of anyone else who would be more under pressure.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
Don, we were just before the end of the break there joking about how much pressure the Maple Leafs are going to be under in a week or so when the playoffs start. It's going to be, I would argue, the pressure is going to be stifling on the Maple Leafs. They have to win a round. It's been 17 years since they've won a single playoff round. Now, it's unfortunate they are going to be playing their first round against the two-time defending Stanley Cup champions who are looking pretty good right now. That's, you know, if the playoff format was the way it used to be with 1-8, their chances are much better. Nonetheless, I'm wondering for you, you've been in a lot of hockey, you've been in a lot of stuff. You prefer to go in as a favorite or do you prefer to go in as the underdog?
It depends. Went in with the Brantford Smokers, a minor pro team, went in as the favorite, and we had a real good hockey club and an excellent goaler. And so going in was okay being the favorite. But if you are not clearly, I mean, if you're only the favorite by a little bit, I don't want to be the favorite. I'd rather be the underdog.
You think it makes that much difference in the room?
Yeah, it does. Because if you've got the confidence, then you're going to be fine. Like, if you know you're the best and all you have to do is play well and you're going to win, I don't mind that in a hockey team or any kind of a team. But if you're only marginally better, and then you've got to convince your guys that the other guys are better because you are the underdog, no matter what somebody else is saying. So you either want to be, these guys should win this thing, it's just a matter of how many games, or they're probably the better team, but it might take them 7 to win it. That's not the way you want to be the favored team, in my mind. So Tampa Bay, I think Tampa Bay, Toronto's a pick'em. Toronto are a pretty good hockey club, but everything's going to have to go well for them. They can't take a night off. They can't take a shift off.
No, and you have to hope, if you're the Leafs, you have to hope like crazy that Tampa's goalie doesn't find his form that he's had in the last two playoff runs where you can't score on him no matter what. And also, I think if you're the Leafs, you have to hope that you don't get behind early in this one because, again, I think the pressure on this team, if they get behind, is going to be absolutely suffocating. They just, because it's Toronto and it's been so long since they've had any success, and I think that they just, I mean, maybe you disagree. Maybe you think that they can block everything out. Maybe you think that they're professional athletes, so every little thing that's going on can be completely erased from their mind. I don't believe they can. They know exactly what is happening in the world and how much pressure is on them.
Well, they do. And they don't have to read the papers. They know exactly what's being written, what's being talked about on sports radio. They can say they don't listen, but they've listened to enough, television, radio, newspaper stuff. They don't have to read it, but they know what's being said because they listen to it in the off season, or they read about it in the off season. I'll tell you.
They're asked about it in every press conference, or every time they go out to the store. If they do, somebody mentions something to them, I would think impossible not to be aware. I don't care how much you pretend that you're not going to pay attention. You're aware.
Here is the pressure they're under, though. This hockey team, if they go up on Tampa 3-1, nobody is going to say they've got this thing wrapped up because they did that with Montreal, and they did go into that series as the favorite, as they should have been, and they got beat, and they got beat 3 straight. So can you imagine in the back of your mind if the Leafs are up 3-1, the fans are still just going to – they're really going to ramp it up because they're going to say, well, we know what Montreal did. Montreal – lucky to be in the playoffs. These guys have won 2 straight Stanley Cups. So the pressure will be on them until the end of the first round and they win. And heaven forbid if they don't win, then they're, I don't know. I don't know how long ownership can stay with the group they've got running it if they don't win this year. I mean,
I suppose it depends how, if you don't win, how did you lose? And, if every game is close and if they're right there and a bounce here or a bounce there, and then Tampa goes on to have a long run again, you can say, well, you know what, an unlucky bounce for us and we're in there. I mean, but you lose 4-1 or you lose a couple of the games by blowout, maybe a different story. And then I'm with you. But, boy, I it's so interesting because players get paid a lot of money, especially the star players. They get paid a lot of money. And this is why you get paid a lot of money. I know you're not being paid in the playoffs, but you are being paid an exorbitant amount of money, especially if you're playing in a place like Toronto, to produce when it counts and also to stand up and be accepting that pressure. Because a guy like Mitch Marner, last year Mitch Marner disappeared in the playoffs. He can't do it again. You're being paid. They don't care. I mean, they do, but they don't care if Mitch Marner gets 100 points in the regular season. They care that he produces the playoffs now, period.
Well, I'm going to tell you, I think they do get paid for the playoffs, and I'll tell you why I believe that. If this group You mentioned Marner, so let's run with that. If he doesn't have a couple good playoffs before his contract's up, I will absolutely guarantee you it will have a big factor on what he signs for. We talked about Jack Eichel in the first segment. Like, if Eichel doesn't do something during this contract and his performance is what it is, and he doesn't help somebody win, you think that's not going to affect what somebody's going to pay him? I mean, he'll get well paid. But if Eichel or if Marner, like if Marner has, I don't know how long he's going on his contract, a couple of years, I think. If he has two stellar playoff appearances, he'll again write his own ticket. He'll get whatever he wants. So I would say they do get paid for the playoffs. Because if they wet the bed and they don't perform, a GM's going to say, you know what, we really don't need to pay a guy $10 million to do well in the playoffs.
Since I can't hear you for the moment, let us go to a break here. The Bulldogs have just scored. They were down 2-0. They have just scored with a minute 48 left in the first period. It is now 2-1 for Peterborough over the Bulldogs. And Don, since I really can't hear much of what you're saying, we'll take a very quick break here. We'll come back with more with Don Robinson right after this.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
Don Robertson is with me. And Don, last week, everybody is aware, Guy Lafleur passed away. And, you know, I'm wondering if there's a chance that there could be another Guy Lafleur. And I don't mean a Guy Lafleur as a player, because there's lots of great players in the league. But can there be, in modern sports, when guys move around so much and you rarely play for your hometown team, can there be a guy who is not just a great player but is sort of representative of your city that way, or your province or your state or your country? Is that possible today?
Is it possible? Yes. Not particularly probable. I mean, Guy Lafleur was special, clearly. Won so many cups for the Montreal Canadiens, and I'll tell you how loyal that fan base is and how much tradition that organization has. He left and played for the Quebec Nordiques, and there wasn't a much more bitter rivalry than Molson's owning the Canadiens and Carling O'Keefe owning the Nordique. And he was welcome back to the Montreal Canadiens family with open arms. You've got to be a pretty big legend to turn your back on the Habs, play for the arch rival, then come back and everybody opens their arms and hugs you. That's
well,
how
wasn't
special
it,
a guy like Guy Lafleur was. And I don't know if that's possible to ever happen again.
Was it Boom Boom Geoffrion, or was it Maurice Richard that coached the Nordique also for a short period of time? One of them did. Even if Austin Matthews was to win four Stanley Cups for the Maple Leafs, I don't know that he becomes Guy Lafleur, because nothing, I mean, it's not his fault, but as an Arizona guy, he's not the guy who in every single way represents the culture the way that someone who plays in Quebec or in some other place would. He would be a legend. He'd be an absolute legend if he did that in Toronto, no question. I just don't know if you can ever, and again, the way sports is now with free agency and everything else, I don't know that you could ever find that again, where you become not just the star of stars, but also the guy who is the face of an entire culture.
Yeah, when you frame it like that, I think you're right. You never say never, but boy, I wouldn't be calling the score bet to put any money on it. I'll tell you, that would be a hard one to believe could re-happen. I mean, the only guy that could have maybe reached that stature in Toronto would have been Doug Gilmore and Wendell Clark. Had they have won two or three Stanley Cups in Montreal or Toronto, you don't have to win that many. But if they'd have won two or three, they'd have ascended to a level seldom seen in modern
times. But even Wendell Clark, even Wendell Clark, and I think Wendell Clark is a much better example. You know, good examples both. But I think Wendell Clark is a better example than Gilmore because Gilmore was there for a short period of time. He was fantastic, but he was there for a short period. But Wendell Clark, even if he had won a few Stanley Cups, he's from Saskatchewan, and again, it's not quite the same. If maybe, I mean, and then I was going to say, okay, well, what if Austin Matthews went to Arizona and won a bunch of cups down there, which seems like a longest of long shots the way the Coyotes are right now. But even then, you can't say the same because he started and played a chunk of his career in Toronto. He's not the guy who played his whole life pretty much. Now, I know that LaFleur, as you say, went to the Rangers and then went to the Nordiques, but he was, all of his productive years were in Montreal. I mean, he was a Montreal guy. And the other thing is, I don't know, is there a, and someone who was from Arizona may want to tell me, I'm not knowing what I'm talking about, but is there a culture in Arizona that is so unique like there is in Quebec where you would say that it's different from everywhere else? As I say, and even in Toronto, I'm not sure that if Wendell Clark had won a bunch of cups here, I'm not sure that the culture is so different that he stands out. I don't know. When we saw the death of Guy Lafleur, I thought, I don't know that we're going to see something like that again. And maybe we will, but I just don't know how.
I don't think so. I can tell you, I'm not from Arizona, but I can answer that question. No, there is no hockey culture. Although, if Austin Matthews went there, he could maybe help them sell out the 5,000-seat arena they're going to play in.
Yeah, I would hope. I would hope. But I'm, you know, it may be unique to Quebec because Quebec is such a different culture from the rest of the country. Or maybe if, you know, maybe if Vancouver had won, what year was that they played against the Bruins in the finals? 2010, 2011, something like that? Maybe if Vancouver had won, and I was going to say the Sedins, but once again, that's a little different. They would have been legends, but they're not from Vancouver originally. So, and you know,
Canada.
No, and I don't mean to sound like it's xenophobic or something. That's not it. I'm not saying they would have not been beloved. They would have been absolutely beloved, but there's a layer there that Guy Lafleur had that none of those other examples had.
No, the only one in the modern era for Toronto now, I think, that at that level would be Mitch Marner because he's a Toronto guy. But when you just kind of cycle that through your thought process, it's different times, Scott. It's different eras. One of the things that everybody spoke glowingly about was Guy Lafleur flying down the ice with his hair flowing.
Yep.
And just the look. It seemed more graceful back then, right? I mean, but the hair is blowing, and it's just a whole different era that we'll never see again.
Yeah, and
so there's a host of things that go with it.
Well, there's all the things, because as we said, it's not just the culture, it's the fact that he was the best player in the league, and the culture, and the team, and the hair. Like, when we're talking about this, and I said this the other day when we were chatting about this on the radio, I was not a Guy Lafleur fan growing up, and that's not to insult the man. I grew up not cheering for the Canadiens, but the fact that you really hated Guy Lafleur as a kid was a compliment, ultimately. It's the same with Bobby Orr if you didn't like the Bruins, or Gretzky if you didn't like the Oilers. The fact that he was the guy being booed, and he was the guy that you didn't really like, was a compliment. It was because he was that much of a star and that much of a difference maker. And there was nobody in hockey that didn't know who Guy Lafleur was.
No, you're right. And he come up through an era where the Rocket hands it off to Beliveau kind of hands it off to Lafleur.
Yep.
And the Montreal Canadiens, I posted something probably... maybe on Twitter. I'm not a big Twitter guy, but now that my buddies bought it, I may use it a bit more. But just saying that there was on Facebook. There is absolutely never. There's no other sports franchise on the planet that honor people properly and as gracefully as the Montreal Canadiens.
Sorry, you said as gracefully, right? You said as not disgracefully, as gracefully. Okay, yeah, yeah.
Now they're the absolute best at it. I mean, everybody could take a page out of their book on how to do it right on a ceremony. And like I say, that torch they hand down just is also very classy. You know, nobody kind of gets run out of town when their usefulness is gone. So I just the elegance that they have, I am a long way from a Montreal Canadiens fan because they used to beat up on my Toronto Maple Leafs when I was a kid, and I didn't like any of them. I didn't even like Ken Dryden from Hamilton. His uncle was my best. So my dog, I didn't like him. But they're good at it, and it's a different era. No more flowing hair. It's just a different time.
Well, okay, so we've got to go, but let me ask you this. So the one guy who, as we're talking about this, the one guy maybe, if things had worked out differently, and if people go back and look at the story, the Toronto Maple Leafs, we're told, missed getting Connor McDavid by one ping pong ball. If Connor McDavid had come to the Leafs and led them to a bunch of Stanley Cups, maybe that's the same thing. But here's the thing. Do you truly believe in the modern era of hockey? Do you believe Connor McDavid will spend his entire career in Edmonton?
No.
I'm not positive either. I'm not positive Austin Matthews spends his whole career in Toronto. And again, we go back. I know LaFleur left, but LaFleur retired because he couldn't, by his own estimation, he wasn't getting along with the coach, but also he wasn't playing as well anymore. He couldn't do it. And it was later that he came back, but all of his productive time was with the one team, with his team. I don't know. I'll be surprised if we ever have anyone like him. And the one thing we know for sure we'll never have is, Don, I don't know if... I don't know how many players, there's not many, players in the NHL who have something with their style that is instantly recognizable. Gretzky had the tucked-in shirt. That was instantly recognized if you didn't already know who Wayne Gretzky was. LaFleur had the hair. Like, there's not a lot of now with helmets and with standardized equipment and tie-down shirts and all the rest. Like, you could almost, it's almost impossible even to imagine that you could stand out that much just in the visual side of things. I don't even see someone doing that anymore.
No, they don't, because they've taken the personality away from it. I mean, they've taken it out, right? I mean, they're just, everybody looks the same, and they dress the same, and so that's another reason why there's not much chance they'll be on the floor. Now, that's why I said I doubt it, and it would be hard to do to replicate what LaFleur did in Montreal, even with Connor McDavid. But I will tell you one thing. If Connor McDavid, whose first OHL training camp was in Ancaster, as you remember, if Connor McDavid leaves the Edmonton Oilers, it will be done in a far different fashion than Eichel leaving Buffalo.
I would expect. It would be shocking if it wasn't. Don Robertson, we've got to let you go. But let's really appreciate the time today. Thanks for doing this. And again, congratulations on the Senior A Championship. Again, it's been a few years, but it is again. You've done it a bunch of times, and way to go.
Thank you, Scott. Appreciate it. Good luck to the Bulldogs tonight. Thanks a lot. Thank you.
It is 2-2, by the way, in the first intermission. Tie game.
The Scott Radley Show. Weekday evenings from 6 to 8 on 900 CHML.
The Scott Radley Show podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Scott Radley. Thanks again for listening, and do not forget to subscribe to this podcast. It is free. You will never miss an episode, and also be sure you rate us and review us. Whatever you think of us, we'll take it. Thanks for listening.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.